You're listening to Cinematic Adventures, proud member of the Misfit Faction Media Network.
Good morning, Vietnam!
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
I feel the need for speed.
Roads, where we're going, we don't need roads.
Snakes. Why did it have to be snakes?
Vargas? We don't need no Vargas. I don't have to show you any stinking vices.
You make me want to be a better man.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Love means never having to say you're sorry.
He's looking at you, kid.
I've always depended on the kindness. Strange.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
Would you be shocked if I put on something more comfortable?
You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You just put your lips together and blow.
I'm not bad. I'm just drawn that way.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cinematic Adventures. Don't forget, if you guys are listening to us on the go, you can find us on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, basically anywhere you guys get your podcast. You can also find more of our content on our website, themisfitfaction.com. There you'll find links to not only this show, but our other shows like the Multiverse Fancast and MF Uncensored. You can also find links to our news, reviews, articles, and our brand new, or not brand new, Misfit Faction store. So make sure you guys check that out again. That's themisfitfaction.com. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Paul. With me in the studio today is Sean. Sean, how are you today?
I am good, Paul. How about you?
I'm doing all right, Sean.
Oh, that's great.
Thank you for asking. What a guy.
I always ask.
Yeah, well, you know, we're talking about a disaster film, so I'm glad we're not talking about a disaster friendship.
That's true.
Thank you. I thought about that one for
a
minute.
That was good. Thank you. I like that.
According to Wikipedia, this is a disaster film.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Yep. But it is the month of July at the time of recording. I don't know when this episode is getting released, but it's going to be weird scheduling-wise for the next couple of weeks, so bear with us.
And just blame Paul, guys. It's all Paul's fault.
It's all Paul's fault. But we are talking about the 1996 blockbuster hit Independence Day, or ID4, as it was called everywhere else.
That's very true. I remember, yeah.
Yeah,
very
remember
much.
That? Yeah, the big logos and
posters all said ID4
everywhere. And it didn't make sense because everybody was like, there's a fourth ID movie? Yeah, it didn't make no sense whatsoever. But this movie is something that Sean and I have been talking about for a while. And since it is July, we just did The Sandlot. We figured, why not do this? What was our logic? July.
It was July, but obviously 4th of July was last week. But we had the Obi-Wan episode that we wanted to get out as fast as we could.
And I was out of town.
Yeah, so it's just timing. We couldn't exactly do this episode on the 4th of July, so here it is. We're doing it a week late.
I still had fun with the Sandlot episode, though.
I did, too.
Yeah. I got a lot of things on my mind. It's still my favorite movie quote now of all time. I don't know why.
You just say that to producer Melanie all the time? She's got a lot of things on my mind.
She's got a lot of things on my mind. I said,
she's like, what? What could you possibly have on your mind?
Stuff.
Oh, okay.
Stuff and things and stuff. But we are going to be jumping into this movie. I got a lot of things on my mind, Sean. All right? I got a lot of things on my mind. But yes, we are jumping.
You do, actually. I have to admit, you do have a lot of things on your mind.
Oh, my God. What a time. I'm supposed to have less on my mind.
You do need a haircut, though.
Shut up. But anyway, shut up. I'm making it difficult for us to go see Thor because I'm going to get my hair cut.
I honestly don't care. Yeah, I really don't. Like, if I don't see Thor, I'm not going to cry about it.
I will. I want to see it. I've wanted to see Thor, though, for a while. But we are talking about Independence Day, not Thor. But we are going to do an episode. At the time that this is released, we'll have seen Thor.
I hope so.
I hope so as well.
I mean, you know, your haircuts take a long time, man.
Shut up. You shut your mouth. I should look like Thor. Just grow my hair out like him in this new movie. I could.
Can your hair grow that long? Does it grow? You're going to have a fro, or are you going to actually let it flow down your back?
Obviously, I'm going to go full fro. Like, why are we even discussing this?
You're going to look like full Will Ferrell and semi-pro.
I'm going to cut all this out. I'm going to edit this whole sequence
out.
No,
you're not.
But before we jump into Independence Day, Sean, do you have any news?
Do I have any news? Yes, I do, sir. So we've mentioned it a couple times throughout, you know, our episodes here on Cinematic Adventures. We are big fans of Kevin Smith, and we did do an episode on the Jay and Silent Bob reboot a year plus ago. So just the other day, he dropped the trailer, the official first trailer for Clerks 3.
Which we have been waiting for.
We have been waiting for. Now, this is... Kevin Smith has been trying to get away from the View Askew universe, you know, for a couple years now. I mean, he did Clerks 2 back in 2006. Oh, my God. And then after that, he did Zack and Miri, which wasn't part of the View Askew universe, no. But it falls in that kind of feel.
Same kind
of
category.
But then he did like a couple movies where like Yoga Hosers and
his
movies that,
the Blood in Canada trilogy or whatever it's called.
But you know, we got the Jay and Silent Bob reboot 2 years ago, and I thought it was hysterical. You agree with me?
I think the only thing I didn't like about that movie was the whole Iron Bob sequence.
Yeah,
that was just silly. But I think the rest of the movie was just super solid, surprisingly solid.
Surprising, and it wasn't released to theaters. It was released straight to Amazon Prime.
Right.
This movie will be released to theaters, so I'm actually very excited about that. And it's got the whole cast coming back. I mean, it's got
Rosario Dawson.
Rosario Dawson's coming back. Jeff Anderson as Randall. Why am I blanking on Dante, the actor who plays Dante's name? He's back. The kid who plays Elias, who I don't think he's done a single thing since Clerks 2, is coming back. So obviously Jay and Silent Bob will be there. It's very, I guess the word is meta. They're going to basically, making a film of Randall, and they're just going to be redoing like things from the first movie. That's pretty funny. So
It looks like it's going to have that Jay and Silent Bob reboot feel.
Yes, and I'm going to sit here right now, and I will be shocked if when we do an episode on that movie, we're not going to be happy with it. I would very much assume we're both going to laugh, we're both going to find it funny. Is it going to be on level with Clerks 2 or Mallrats or, Dogma? We can't say right now, but we both very much enjoy Kevin Smith, and he really hasn't let us down.
I think leading up to it, we'll probably do some of the other movies of his.
We've done Mallrats.
We've done Mallrats.
Did we do Clerks and Clerks 2? I think we've done Clerks and Clerks 2.
Maybe.
So we probably should do Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. And yeah, so we're looking forward to that. When is it coming out? That's a very good question.
That is a fantastic question. I really wish we were
We are bad at this right now, and I apologize for that, folks. I really do, but honestly, I don't care because it's our podcast. We can do whatever we want.
I'm not sure how I feel about that, but anyway.
You don't feel a lot of things, apparently.
It's coming out September 4th.
See, that's September 13th.
Well, the world premiere is September 4th in Red Bank, New Jersey, before its wide release on September 13th.
That's cool.
That is cool. That is cool, Sean.
What if we could get tickets to the world premiere, show up and say, hey, we're part of the Misfit Faction Media Network.
We've tried to do stuff like that.
Well, that was when you guys had, nothing behind you. Now you at least have a,
What's behind me?
Channel network name, I guess. You could, use that. Because when you guys did it the last time, you were just the multiverse.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, we'll see. But other than that, as of recording right now, as we said earlier, Thor: Love and Thunder has been released at theaters. It's already doing very well money-wise. Apparently, it's not doing very well critics-wise. Obviously, we can't say anything to that until we see the movie, hopefully on Friday.
Also, we really don't believe in the critic reviews.
Yeah, but usually with Marvel movies, the critics' reviews are pretty good. So probably I'm kind of surprised by that.
View bombs.
So we'll see. I'm looking forward to it. Mm-hmm. Christian Bale is the bad guy. Anytime Christian Bale's in a movie, I am... down. So.
Yeah, I can't wait to do who'd win in a fight with Gore, his new character, mm-hmm. and whatever other characters I can possibly think of.
There you go.
That'll be fun.
Now, this just came to me. I knew I would remember something as I'm doing this. So I don't put any stock into it because I haven't seen any official release yet. But you scroll on Facebook and they have like these fan pages, and I never know what's real or what's not. They said that Margot Robbie is in talks to join the MCU, possibly as Emma Frost.
Oh,
some people think she could be Sue Storm in the Fantastic Four movie, but just wanted to get your thoughts on that. Is that, that hamper her ever doing Harley Quinn again?
I don't think so. I think Harley Quinn would prove to be one of the more popular characters from the DCEU, especially with Margot Robbie. There'd be some retaliation if they recast Harley Quinn, I think.
Well, they would recast it unless they're gonna act like that's, you're working for Marvel, we don't want to deal with you anymore.
No, they've gotten much better with stuff like that. I mean, Idris Elba, I'm sure they would take him back as
absolutely,
as Heimdall if the situation ever, but he just did Suicide Squad, so I don't know.
That's true.
Yeah.
But I saw that earlier today and I thought that was interesting, and again, no official, this is, we're not
just
breaking
rumor.
News, it's just rumor out there, and just curious what your thought was, so.
I'd be okay with it.
But that's about it on the news front here, Paul.
Cool. All right. So we're going to jump into Independence Day. We're going to talk about primarily the first one. We'll mention the second one because it exists. And this is going to be a nice trip down a nostalgia way. But first, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are talking Independence Day. Hey guys, today's episode is brought to you by Raise Energy Drinks. Raise is a proud member of Rep Sports, and if you guys are looking for a little extra kick during your day, whether you need to tackle a workout or you need to get over that afternoon slump, you can always check out Raise Energy. And if you get to check out and you enter the code CINEMATIC, not only will you be getting a 15% discount, but you'll also be supporting the network. So that's Raise Energy with Rep Sports. Code is CINEMATIC, CINEMATIC. All right, we are back, and it is time to talk about Independence Day. Sean, not the holiday before we get started. Talk about the movie.
The movie.
So, Shawnee, first memories or first thoughts about Independence Day. When you hear the movie Independence Day, what comes to mind immediately?
Wow. Aliens.
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 Probably, in my opinion, one of the great speeches in movie history.
Greatest movie speech. I would say at least top
five. It's up there.
I'd
have to really look and really go through all the famous speeches said in a movie, but this is one that just gets you going when you hear it. Every 4th of July, whether I watch the movie or not, I always YouTube that scene.
Oh, yeah.
Because it just gets you in the mood.
Then they try and do it in the second one. It just doesn't land.
No. But... That would be my first thought when you say Independence Day, aliens, and that speech.
Mm-hmm. Mine is Austin Powers and the Spy Who Shagged Me when he sends the message to the president and uses the footage from Independence Day as part of it.
That is an iconic scene.
It is an iconic scene. You cannot even argue that.
I'd say the White House being blown up is the more iconic scene than the Empire State Building. The only reason why is because that scene with the Empire State Building is not possible. You can't see the Empire State Building like that in real life. It's great. It's a great effect. But I think the White House scene is much more powerful.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially with the helicopter trying to take off and it gets caught in it.
You know, and the helicopter's like sideways.
Yeah. So.
But this movie is arguably the first of... It really set off the disaster film.
It brought back the disaster film.
Yeah, for the modern era.
Yeah. Because with this film, we got Deep Impact. We got Armageddon.
Mars Attacks. Around the same time?
You're not wrong there. I can't remember if Mars Attacks is 96 or 97, but yeah, and definitely Mars Attacks spoofs, you know, the 50s sci-fi films. So I'm not, you know, definitely I could put that in there. Definitely agree.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think there's other ones. Godzilla, as much as we, you know, make fun of that movie, but that's part of this genre that, you know, started up with Independence Day.
Mm-hmm.
And... I know I'm missing one or two, but that's really where
this movie really made it mainstream again.
Yes. It combined the disaster film with the sci-fi, you know.
I even give it some Jaws vibes sometimes because you don't see the aliens.
No.
They very, very few.
Not till the end.
Like you get three real scenes with these aliens.
Yeah.
And the first is when Will Smith, you know,
punches him. Great scene.
It's a great scene, but it doesn't make any sense.
No. But it's
Welcome to Earth. Still, this was also the one liner.
I'm sorry, he can't have that good of a right hook. They're wearing body armor.
I was about to say, I thought you were gonna make a Chris Rock joke.
I could have, but I know just
you thought about it. You thought about it.
I could have, but I'm like, you know, like, where was that right hook at the Oscars, man? I'm not going there.
Yeah, suppose they're wearing body armor.
Wearing body armor. He's knocked out for like hours, which makes no sense.
Yeah. So. And then you have the same alien in the hospital scene, and then at the end you see them just kind of doing their thing.
That hospital scene terrified me.
I had to walk out as a kid.
Yeah.
When I first, because how, this was 96.
I did not see it in theaters.
I saw it in theaters.
You did?
Okay, yeah, and no, the second that they cut it open, and it's funny, when you watch these movies, any movie as a kid, everything's dialed up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So like you watch it now as an adult, when they cut it open and it opens like quickly, it's not scary, it's not startling, but as a kid... I could have sworn that happened instantly, and it was like,
And it wasn't even that scene that got me. It was the whistling thing that started, you know, that would make the scientist guy was like doing, you know, freaking out.
Yeah.
And then obviously the thing wakes up, and you don't see him kill, you don't see the alien kill everybody, but you just know he's done it. And then that scene I couldn't watch, but from the minute the president and his, you know, team arrive, and then the scientist gets pushed up against the window, I had no problem watching that.
Interesting.
I thought that scene was fantastic, where it's speaking through him,
mm-hmm.
and then they shoot at it through the glass. I love that. But for some reason, when they cut into it, and it wakes up, that terrified me.
I went to the bathroom during the seeing that movie. I went with my stepdad. I remember it.
Yeah.
There are very few movies that as a kid I had to walk out of, even for a little bit. The Sixth Sense, I had to like actually leave. It was too much for
too
me
much.
As a kid. Like,
because
I was a scared kid of stuff like that.
Jurassic
I hated
Park,
stuff like that.
I was terrified, obviously, when the Velociraptor, you know, the fins popped out and I left the theater.
You mean the Dilophosaurus?
What did I say? The Velociraptors?
How? They're not. How dare you? But this movie, like, especially now as an adult, I'll still stand. This movie still holds up.
Absolutely.
This movie still is just a lot of fun. It also brought Will Smith from the Fresh Prince to the big screen.
He had Bad Boys, but this movie put him into the stratosphere. Solidified him as a bankable movie star.
Yeah, especially because even though he is, to a point, comedic relief, he's still also a very serious character in this movie.
Yes.
So let's go through the cast. So we'll go top billing. What did actually go to Will Smith, which is even crazier.
Oh, yeah. I mean, really, I'm sure he had a deal to be top billing because... But when you look at it, Jeff Goldblum, Bill Pullman, neither of them are like superstars that I could see them doing top billing. So I get it, but it doesn't shock me that Will Smith got top billing.
Originally, the role was supposed to go to Ethan Hawke, but he turned it down.
The Will Smith role?
No, the Will Smith role. That's what's out there. Interesting. Yeah. So he plays Captain Steve Hiller. I will argue that it's because he didn't come back for the sequel that sequel automatically started
off
a little bit lower.
Absolutely.
But not that I have a problem with Jesse Usher, who plays his son in the second one, because he's fantastic on The Boys. He plays A-Train. But yeah, the fact that they just could not get him.
No, I agree.
I think that was a scheduling issue or something like that, or maybe he just didn't want to come back.
I don't know. I still think the movie would have sucked anyway, even if he was in it.
That's fair.
I'll be honest.
That is fair.
I'm sorry. I just feel like this is one of those movies, you just leave it alone. Don't touch it.
We did not need a sequel to it. Especially...
Because it minimizes everything about this movie. They came back much stronger and whatever. And I'm like... Okay, so now when I watch this movie, it's not the same. Like, you won.
I'd watch a movie where, like, the aliens try and come back, but they're weaker, and Earth just kicks their ass.
Pretty much.
Or even better, I'd watch a movie from the other's perspective where the humans go after them.
Yeah.
See? Again.
But I mean, like, you know, they're landing on the moon in the second one. They're doing all this stuff. Because
they take all the technology from this first one.
Like, I'm good. Thank you.
Yeah. But anyway. All right, so we have Steve Hiller. He's, would you consider him the star of this movie or Jeff Goldblum?
Oh, that's a very good question because really Will Smith doesn't appear till I'd say a half hour into the movie.
And then he doesn't meet up with everybody until like the last third.
I think Will Smith definitely deserves to be the star of this movie because when he is on screen, he steals the scenes he's in, even with Jeff Goldblum, even though I think Jeff Goldblum is fantastic in this movie. So I think Will Smith does deserve to be lead actor in this movie, but I do think Jeff Goldblum is sort of the glue of this movie.
Because he also keeps the script moving.
Yes.
Like,
because you believe everything coming out of his mouth.
But he's, also, without him, the president and all of them wouldn't have survived.
Oh, no. I totally agree.
Yeah. So he keeps the plot really moving.
He gets the plot to Will Smith in terms of meeting up with him later on in the movie.
Mm-hmm. All right. So going down the list, we have Bill Pullman as the president. President Thomas J. Whitmore.
See, I love this because literally right when this movie came out, is around the time when I first saw Spaceballs.
Yes.
So Bill Pullman in Spaceballs and then watching Bill Pullman in this, it was like...
All right, who'd win in a fight?
Lone Star versus the president?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a good one. I've got to give it a Lone Star.
You got to give it to Lone Star?
Not by much, though. The president is, as you see at the end of the movie, he's a badass.
I found it interesting that so they do establish that one of the reasons he was elected president was because he was a war veteran and all those things. So I like how they actually put that into the story and had him, you know, I'm a combat fighter, Bill.
Yeah.
I gotta fly.
But I also love how they feed it to you very early in the movie that, you know, he's being attacked, not so much because he's young, but because he hasn't done everything he, of course, said he was going to do.
Politicians.
Which, what a shock.
I don't know.
You know, politics. Honest to God, what a shock. But he also is not showing any signs of that former war veteran, former Army, Navy pilot, you know, whatever he was supposed to have been. So you see him, he's very much controlled, maybe not willingly, but, you know, he doesn't have the balls to stand up to some of these, you know, Washington people early on in the movie, and then you see, obviously, after his wife dies, that he is like
he's done listening.
I'm going to take action, and I'm going to do it myself. So I thought it was a very good performance by Bill Pullman. Not a performance you would expect Bill Pullman to do,
right?
Like, I'm sure in '96 when they were like, "Oh, Bill Pullman's going to play the president," I'm like, really?
Okay, he hasn't done much lately. I think he's kind of taking a break.
Maybe
he's older
son
now.
His son was in Top Gun Maverick.
That's right.
But this was a big time for Bill Pullman because he did this. Casper, I think, was like the year before. So he was very big.
This was a big time for Bill Pullman.
He was big in the 90s, Bill Pullman.
You know what he was really funny in a movie that didn't deserve him? Scary Movie three or four.
I forgot. He plays the village parody. One.
Yeah. Where he gets hit in the balls more than once. And he takes it like a champ. Who'd win in a fight? Speaking of Top Gun, Steve Hiller, the president, or Maverick? Three-way dogfight.
Maverick.
Yeah, you think Maverick?
I think Maverick.
I think so, too. But
again, though, you never know. But
what about Steve Hiller captaining the alien ship at the end?
What about
him using that alien ship in a dogfight against
versus Maverick?
Yes,
I think I could give it to the alien, spaceship.
I don't know. He beat it with a parachute.
Maybe that's very true.
I've been thinking about these today. We are just going in order. We have Jeff Goldblum as David Levinson,
fresh off of a Jurassic Park.
So. I don't know if you've ever experienced this as a kid where you don't associate, like, you always think, like, actors are different people. And so, like, when I was younger, I think I saw this before I fully saw Jurassic Park.
Me too.
Or maybe vice versa, but I never really put it together that they were the same actor.
Oh, that makes sense. Because
when you're young, you don't really think about
it that
way.
But also, when you look at him in this movie and you look at him in Jurassic Park, it's a very different look. Yeah. Jeff Goldblum's one of those actors that could play a nerd in one movie and then play like a sex symbol in the other. I mean,
weird,
remember,
right?
The
Fly?
The Fly was one. Remember Earth Girls Are Easy? Did you ever see that?
Yeah, yeah. You had me see it.
I made you watch that movie. The movie's straight garbage, but there's like, he plays like, the sex alien, like the good-looking, muscular, like really good looking alien. And then you see him in this movie and he's very like, nerdy, computer guy. I mean, he's very good at hiding himself under, a character.
Now, my issue though is, because I've seen the second one, I think I saw it once in its entirety and I just really didn't care for it. The problem with Jeff Goldblum now, and this isn't necessarily a problem, but this is just like, nowadays they just have Jeff Goldblum being Jeff Goldblum.
Well, because he's on TV every day with those commercials that he does.
But even like Thor Ragnarok, like he was just Jeff Goldblum. It's almost like Jeff Goldblum.
Because the character, I think, was probably written for him.
Yeah. But in the second one, it just seems like they kind of let him just kind of be Jeff Goldblum a little bit more. He didn't feel like David in the second one. At least not to me, anyway.
I can't disagree or agree, because like I said, as you just said, I saw the movie back when it like was released to cable, and I have really not much recollection of it.
Man, one of these days we're going to have to rewatch
it. Because it was just not memorable.
Oh, God, terrible.
But Jeff Goldblum, again, as we said, he's fresh off of Jurassic Park, and like you said, I had not seen Jurassic Park all the way through before seeing this movie. So, of course, at the end of this movie where, they're in the spaceship.
And he says, must go faster.
Must go faster. And he's like, go, 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 go. I didn't know that that was a copy off of what he says in Jurassic
and
Park.
And that's when I was younger, I would hear that and go, why does that sound so familiar?
Yeah. And then so like the first time, like a couple years later, when I finally sat down and watched Jurassic Park for the first time and he goes, must go faster. I'm like, I started laughing.
Yeah.
And my dad's like, why are you laughing? I said, because he says that in Independence Day. And I didn't realize that this came first. So that was always a fun moment.
Yeah. We got Mary McDonnell as First Lady Marilyn Whitmore. Not in the movie very much.
No, I think this is more of a, I wouldn't call it a cameo, but definitely, it was trying to find a name actress to play this role, but it really, and don't get me wrong, there is an extended cut of this movie. It's been a while since I've seen it, so she might have extra scenes in that extended cut, but she might have gotten her stuff cut a little more. Very respected actress, Dance with Wolves, a lot of good movies. So, in the scenes she's in, she's very good.
And her and Bill Pullman, even though they don't share a lot of scenes actually together.
Until the death scene, which is hard to watch.
It is hard to watch, especially, being older and, I'm married and, especially given my line of work, those are things that I think about. But the scenes of them on the phone, so phone scenes are done a couple of different ways. Typically, they're done either separately and then they're spliced together, which obviously in the finished product, that's what they do. But sometimes they'll even have like the actors on set with them and they'll be talking back and forth. They I don't know how they did it, because obviously we don't research anything before we do our show.
Oh, you got us.
Got us busted. But they have great chemistry just in their phone conversations, just the way that they talk to each other. She has the running comment about calling him liar.
Yes.
Whenever he's fibbing to her.
She's also very aware that he is being, lambasted, in the press, and she won't let that happen. She's defending him wherever she can. She has that line. Not when he tells everyone to evacuate, but like right before it, so she's defending him till the end, all that stuff.
One of the hardest scenes though is like Sean said, the death scene where, he's like, the doctors say you're going to be just fine.
And she goes, liar.
Yeah. And like, they both start crying and they laugh.
And you don't see it. You just see him walk out of the room.
You assume
she's passed away. And then, he has to go and let his daughter know. And his daughter goes, his mom's sleeping.
Yeah.
That's why I like this movie, because it handles, obviously, the big effects. the action, but it has those moments that, like, you know, hit you in the gut.
Yeah.
And that's what makes a good movie like this. I mean, it's not just the effects and the action scenes. The acting is good. The storyline is, yes, it's over the top, but it works. Mm-hmm. You know, the scenes are very well done.
I like the scene where they're on Air Force One and Bill Pullman's talking. He's like, we could have evacuated hours ago. Like, this is on me. And you feel it. Feel that. Like, they don't ever really, especially in action movies, they don't ever talk about the repercussions of that stuff. But you know what scene always gets me, though? The scene with the dog. Even though I know that dog is going to survive, and I know that dog's going to be fine, and now the fire effects are a little hokey.
I would have loved, well, maybe not in 1996, because I probably would have been scared, but now, if this movie ever got released back to theaters, I would love to see it in a big screen
with
a lot of people, because this movie would have been one of those movies that people are cheering, people are like, oh my God, no!
Yeah.
You know, screaming at the screen, type of stuff.
The scene with the dog, man. Oof.
It's always, you know, dogs, anytime pets are involved, and you're just like... No.
Don't you dare. Yeah, John Wick is still rough to watch. We got Judd Hirsch as Julius Levinson.
Steals the movie.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun. He is a lot of fun.
Love him. Anything he does, I'll watch.
I like how his conspiracy theories about Area 51 turn out to be real. This is also the first movie that ever really brought attention to Area 51, which is a real Air Force base. Supposedly it's used for experimental air flights.
Yeah. But just his one-liners throughout the movie, he's got some great ones.
Nobody's cutting you off. Yeah, the two of them are perfect together.
Oh, him and Jeff Goldblum are great together, perfect casting in terms of father-son. You know, it really was great.
All right, you're going to have to help me with this next name. Robert Loggia.
Yeah, it's spelled L as in look. It's Robert Loggia.
If you guys watch Family Guy, old Family Guy.
Old, you'll get season that one or two of Family Guy.
As General William Gray?
Yes.
He's there.
So he is also, because from minute one, you can tell he respects Bill Pullman as the president. He respects him as a person. He wants to make sure that he's doing the right thing. He even goes over him a couple times, because like when the other politicians are like, you know, saying, oh, we've decided to do this. And General's like, that's not what the president said.
Mm-hmm.
So you tell from the beginning that he is behind the president any way possible, and he's by his side from minute one, never leaves his side. I don't know if there's a history between them, like earlier on. Like
I feel like he probably served under him or something.
He probably served under
him,
and that's why he's, you know, one of the generals in, you know, I'm sure.
In the cabinet.
But he is very good, too. I mean, I knew Robert Loggia from Big. That was like the movie I saw a lot of when I was a kid. So, like, seeing him in this, I recognized him. And he's got some fun, good moments, too.
Speaking of fun, good moments, Randy Quaid as Russell Case.
He is great in this movie.
The older I get, the more I relate with this character.
I don't know if I relate with the character,
but... It's the wrong field, you idiot. Are you sure? Now, we never really get any confirmation, but do you think he actually did get abducted by aliens?
No, I just think he was a drunk, despicable person. You can see, like, I love the line where the son is like, you're not my father, you're just a man my mom married.
Yeah.
And you also honestly don't know if they truly are his kids.
I want to say
I'm gonna say no.
I would say at least, I think maybe the youngest is
possibly, but yeah, like, it's either they were very young when he began dating the mother, because he's obviously been with them for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't like he's only been there for 2 years, the mother passed away, and now he's in charge, because honestly, I don't think the kids would be there.
It's very strange, because James Duvall, who plays Miguel calls him Russell throughout the entire movie. And obviously, they don't look anything alike.
No, none of them look anything alike.
But at the end, he calls him dad.
Yes. I think he's not technically their father, but he's been with them for a long enough period of time that they feel like that moment at the end.
That's a rough scene, too.
That is tough.
Yeah, when he yells out dad and Adam Baldwin stops him.
But, you know, obviously the character is, he is a drunk. He has been just saying for years that he's been abducted by aliens.
That they're going to come back.
So he's, of course, all the alien stuff happens, and he, you know, is like, oh, I've told you from the beginning, we're going to, you know, there's this great scene where it's like he's being filmed by a camera crew and all that stuff.
He's getting arrested.
Yes. And, it's, you know, he gets his moment at the end, and it's one of those moments I think I can watch anytime. If the ending to this movie is on at any time, I will sit down, I will watch it till the end.
Still holds
up. The last half hour of this movie is one of those where doesn't matter if I haven't seen the rest of the movie, I will sit down and watch the last half hour.
Now, let me ask you, I don't think I've ever asked you this question before. Do you believe in aliens?
Not really.
Not really?
Just, no? You know, I mean, would it shock me if there are aliens? No. But as of right now, I can't really say I do.
I mean, 2020, kind of expected it. Just everything going to hell.
So.
Just see the alien mothership drop down. Well, sounds about right. Apparently,
Damn it!
How are we going to take over the world with a white Michael Jackson?
Here's a planning room!
Yeah. There's a robot chicken. All the old school Adult Swim jokes coming out today. But I believe in them. I think that they're real.
Okay. No, that's fair. And like I said, if it happened, I'd be like, all right.
Okay. Cool. We got Margaret Collin as Constance Spano. I didn't even know her name. Like, that was a character I never really knew.
I think they called her Connie.
They called her Connie. Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, it was obviously she plays the
ex-wife.
They're not divorced, but separated wife of Jeff Goldblum's character.
And we find out that Jeff Goldblum, David Levinson, punched the president.
Punched the president before he was the president. Love Judd Hirsch. You punched the president? He wasn't the president yet. You punched the president.
I thought we were having an affair. Yeah, she's there. She's really just the link to get David.
She's the link,
David
the reason in. Why David goes to Washington, because he wants to rescue, he wants to make sure she is safe.
Yeah, and obviously help.
If she wasn't there, he would give no. Yeah.
I don't know, because he knew about the countdown.
He knew about the countdown, but I don't know if he would have driven to Washington.
Yeah, fair.
He would have gone somewhere else. I don't know what he could have. I don't know what he would have done. This is the beauty of filmmaking. You got to create a reason for why he is going down to, deal with that. But there's some moments in the beginning of the movie where they're obviously talking on the phone, and there's animosity between the two of them. She's left him for this job opportunity. He's bitter.
He's
working at the cable company. He's like
MIT
graduate, all that. There's a scene between him and Judd Hirsch in the beginning of the movie. He's like, listen, I love that you're hanging out with me, but what are you doing with your life? You're an MIT grad and you work for the cable company.
And he's been separated for 3 years.
Yeah, which is about the little more than the term that Bill Pullman has been in as the president.
Yeah, she's there. And then,
yeah, but she has her moments, and of course they reconnect, nice little ending. She's not in the sequel though.
No, did they even mention her?
I don't even remember.
I don't remember either.
You know what? There's a part of me that thinks they did mention that they ended up not staying together.
Probably,
which pissed me off.
Sounds about right though.
I know. That's nothing like that pisses me off about the sequel. It's like, why are you going to ruin the original movie for me?
Mm-hmm.
I hate that.
That's almost like killing Will Smith off in a test flight gone wrong.
Yeah.
Anyway, but we're going to bring back Vivica Fox, and she's a doctor now. But Vivica Fox as Jasmine Dubrow? Dubrow? Dubrow?
What are you reading off about? I'm just curious. You off Wikipedia? Mm-hmm. Okay, because I'm on IMDb, and it's not... Like, where is she? She's all the way down here.
Stephen Hiller's girlfriend, and she has her moments in this movie. Like, she's helping survivors.
She's a badass.
Yeah, she's helping survivors.
She survives the initial attack in L.A. That, of course, we've talked about the scene with the dog, which is...
thank God that little hallway in that tunnel was super secure.
I don't get the physics of fire, how fire doesn't go into...
No, it just goes right past you.
It just goes right past you.
Yeah, if you are just slightly... if you're just listening lazily to the left.
Oh, God.
Yeah, all the Family Guy jokes today. But I enjoy her in this movie.
Yeah.
People tend to underestimate her because she is in adult entertainment.
Yeah. But, she survives and she gathers survivors. They go... She's the one that finds the president's wife.
Mm-hmm.
And they go to the... Why am I blanking on it? The Army base where Will Smith is,
and it's a great scene where he lands there.
Well, he lands there, but before it's like all destroyed, and she thinks he's dead, and they're just kind of camping out there and waiting to see what they can do. But yeah, there are some good moments.
Yeah, and they have a good chemistry, the two of them. Let's see, James Rebhorn as one of the slimiest characters, Albert Nimziski.
He's a character you kind of wish got killed, but he didn't. He has that funny scene at the end where I'm not Jewish, and he goes, nobody's perfect, so. He never really he doesn't have a moment where
he doesn't
get
his comeuppance.
He doesn't give his comeuppance, and he also doesn't really get you don't forgive him.
Yeah.
He just kind of has that I'm a coward.
Who would win in a cowardness competition? Because it wouldn't really be a fight. Him or the lawyer from Jurassic Park?
Ooh. I go with the lawyer from Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
He was just he left kids in the car.
That's fair.
Dude, man, that was just such a pathetic move. Like, at least grab the kids and run, to the bathroom. I mean, that's still stupid, but, or run to the other car where, dinosaur experts are.
Yeah.
So this
character was described as being much like Oliver North. The character's eventual firing lampoons Joe Nimzicki, MGM's head of advertising, who made life very unpleasant for a lot of the people during Stargate. That's funny. I like when things kind of mirror the real world. Oh. Let's see. We have Harvey Fierstein as Marty Gilbert.
Not a little fun, little comic relief. You feel bad when he gets killed. You don't see him die, but you assume he was killed. Yeah. Car lands on him.
He hasn't done. Well, I don't even know the last thing I saw him in.
He's big Broadway.
Yeah, I can see it. He's very distinct voice. I just want to see him, you know, do more makeup for Robin Williams. Unfortunately, we won't.
This is Doubtfire. I know.
That was around the same time.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Adam Baldwin as Major Mitchell. Adam Baldwin.
I love Adam Baldwin. Chuck.
He was great on it. He was in the last season of Angel.
Angel, and then what's the
Firefly?
Firefly.
I got you. Don't worry, buddy.
Thank you.
But yeah, I really like Adam Baldwin. I want to see, and I like him in this movie, even though
he's great.
He's barely in it.
Well, because he doesn't appear till halfway through the movie. But his scenes, he has a good few moments with the president,
and he's also running a lot of the stuff at the end.
Yeah,
I do love the scene though. Is that glass bulletproof? No, sir. And you know,
I see that. That's why I love that scene.
It's a great scene. Robert
Loge is like, is that glass bulletproof? He's like, nope. It's like,
and he goes up to that alien and he puts the final round into him. Like, nobody's business. Badass. Brett Spiner as Dr. Brackish Oaken.
I didn't know this was Brent. Like, I remember watching this movie and my dad's like, oh, you know who that is? And I'm like, no, who is it? I was like, oh, that's Data from Star Trek.
Yep.
I'm like, the robot from Star Trek?
Mm-hmm.
He goes, yeah. So, I loved it. I mean, again, I like him in this movie. Obviously, it's that scene that still, you know, it's hard to watch for me where, you know, he's like, you know, the alien is in his head and making him, like, freak out. I was pissed that they brought him back for the sequel.
And made him like a main character.
It was just the dumbest thing possible. He's literally lying on the ground. His neck is broken in that scene. I think
originally he was supposed to be dead, but they're like, eh.
There's no signs of life. He is dead.
Mm-hmm. Like, they check his pulse and they don't like call for a doctor or anything.
Thank you. Yeah. Like, Adam Baldwin goes up to him and is like, oh, okay, I'm going to go put two in the alien now because he's gone. That pissed me off. As much as I like him, and he has some funny moments in the sequel, I was like, why?
Why?
Is Brent Spiner, like, an amazing person we need to have in the movie?
Yeah.
It's like, they couldn't get Will Smith. Oh, let's get Brent Spiner instead, guys.
You're so mad. You're so triggered. Wow. All right, we mentioned James Duvall as Miguel Case, the oldest of the... He looks so familiar. What else has he been in? It's driving me crazy.
He was in Donnie Darko.
Donnie Darko.
Gone 60 Seconds. It's why I have not seen in 20 years.
Donnie Darko or
Gone in 60 Seconds?
Oh, he's in Not Another Teen Movie as himself.
Really?
Oh, Not Another Movie. Oh, I lied. I misread that.
You just saw Not Another and you were just like, oh, I know this movie.
Mm-hmm. Hercules Reborn.
Yeah, it's very a lot of direct to DVD movies, you know, TV show appearances, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing big.
Nothing big. That's too bad. I liked him. Let's see. Billy Smitsrovich as Lieutenant Colonel Watson.
Oh, yeah. And you see him in a bunch of things.
Harry Connick Jr.
We forgot about Harry Connick. That role was originally meant for Matthew Perry.
I could see it. You know? I can see it.
But I liked Harry Connick, actually, in that movie.
I did, too. He was very funny. The scene where he picks up the wedding ring.
Yes.
And the guy walks around the corner.
He's just like, hey.
Don't tell in the military.
Yeah, you felt the friendship between the two of them. I mean, I'm assuming they were, you know, good friends off screen. I mean, they're both musicians. They were both, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I could see them.
Big in the early 90s, late 80s. He wasn't in that. I think that was, like, his first acting appearance. So it wasn't. I mean, it's not.
He does well, and the scene and where he dies
it's still a tough scene. You know, it's handled very well.
Especially considering they're not in the same spacing. Let's see, Mai Whitman as Patricia Whitmore, the daughter of the president.
I still don't know what he was trying to do though. Like, you know, where he says like
Jimmy.
I was like, hey, man, I'm going to try something. And like,
automatic... He tried to, I guess, build altitude over it.
He immediately like just can't breathe. And I'm like, what were you trying to do?
Yeah.
I don't know what you were trying to do.
It's a shame. But anyway, Ross Bagley as Dylan Dubrow.
Buckwheat.
Yep. We don't see him. He gets replaced by Jesse Usher in the sequel.
Yeah. I don't think he acts anymore, honestly.
Lisa Jacob as Alicia Case, who almost goes all the way with the dude from 10 Things I Hate About You.
Oh, that's right. And she's the daughter from Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yep. Yep. And Giuseppe Andrew as Troy Case, the youngest.
Well done, sir. Well done.
Thanks, man. And luckily, we talked mostly about the plot, so...
We did, because we were basically going over all the plot points while we were talking about the cast. Favorite scenes?
Obviously, the main destruction scene is still iconic. It is something that people always notice and always talk about it. And again, effects-wise, it still, for the most part, still holds up.
Yes.
The scene of the dog actually jumping with the fire behind is very bad green screen at this point. But I actually really enjoy... This movie has a lot of personal moments of people brought together in tragedy that just kind of form bonds. Like Hiller and Dave.
Yeah.
Like they... Hiller tries to create this friendship immediately with him, like almost reminiscent of Jimmy. And, you know, like, this is our victory... Because he still hasn't dealt with the loss of Jimmy. And sure. It's to make him feel better. And, like, he's like, you know, this is important to me. And, like, Dave kind of is like, okay. But, like, you
that lady.
You could see the two of them afterwards, like, just having a beer together.
Yes. And you kind of get that sense at the when they're walking away from the rack and they're, like,
having the cigars and the, yeah. Like, just, it's a very good scene.
The two of them work so well. I mean, they're on screen for literally combined maybe 20 minutes.
And that's being generous.
But when the two of them are together, they're back and forth. I thought was great. In the when they're stuck in the spaceship and they first think they're gonna die, and you know they have that little heart to heart, you know, and then you know they decide, okay, we're gonna just go out in a blaze of glory. They send off the missile. It releases them, and I just love the.
I heard no fat lady.
I hear no fat lady. Forget the fat lady. You're obsessed with the fat lady. Get us out of here.
Yeah, like you could tell that
the back and forth was just fantastic between the two of them.
They worked really well together. Obviously, the speech is still iconic and still like every 4th of July. It's not just you. Like you'll see it everywhere.
The ending scene with Bull Pullman too. I mean, and Randy Quaid. I mean. There is a deleted scene. So originally, in the original cut of the movie, he gets turned down when they were going to search for, you know,
pilots.
Because he's still drunk. So he turns them down, and he ends up showing up in his biplane.
Yep.
With a missile, like, rubber, like, bungee corded to his thing. And it's basically the same scene, only it's just much more, like, crazier.
Yeah.
So
I think they did it better.
They did it better with that he was a pilot. You know, he can handle himself.
And he
sobers up.
He has one of the best lines in the entire movie. I picked a hell of a day to quit drinking.
And now, here's my thing. When he's first getting into the fighter jet, and he hits the button and it says missile, you know.
Missile launch.
And then he finally figures out and nothing happens. I'm assuming that's the reason why the missile at the end of the movie doesn't launch.
We never really get an explanation, but that's a fair assumption, yeah. I think.
But obviously the scene where he looks at the picture of his kids and he's like, you know, do me a favor, tell my kids I love them very much.
Oh, man, that
that blue light hits his face and he goes, you know, hey, boys, I'm back. And then boom.
Yeah. In the words of my generation, up yours.
I do remember, though, asking my parents, I was like, is he still alive? My parents are like, no.
He go boom.
He go boom.
But he also figures out, I like this version a lot better. Because one of the biggest tropes nowadays is you destroy the mothership and everything else gets the exit. Avengers was famous for it. Phantom Menace was famous for it. Phantom Menace, I still say, makes more sense because they were all droids.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie, at least they use that to figure out. They're like, yo, tell everybody that that's their weak points. Like that's, and all the shields are still down. As far as we know, because the mothership does get destroyed while the shields are still down.
Yes. Now, the mothership doesn't. I think the mothership doesn't, by them destroying the mothership, it didn't destroy everything. They assume everyone took the ship down the way the Americans took it down.
So my only question is, so basically he's like, yo, we're going to get up there and the shields will be down for a matter of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So I just always assume that because they never fixed it and the ship was destroyed, that all the shields are still just down.
I would assume so.
Yeah.
Because once the mothership is destroyed... There's no connection between them and the ships below on the planet. So the minute that ship's destroyed, all the other ships, you know,
don't have their shields either. Again, that's just one thing that they don't ever really address.
But I always loved, you know, obviously the whole point of this movie is, you know, it's every country teaming together because, you know, we're all against the same enemy here. So, you know, you get your scene where, you know, you see like London and Africa and Iraq and all of them are like, you know, come up with a plan. They're using the Morse code, which was a great scene because obviously the aliens are tracking any type of satellite use. So it was just, I really believe like this movie just hit on all levels. It was just one of those, you know, perfect combinations of cast, story, effects, timing. This is a movie that really we hadn't seen in a long time. I mean, like, we're going back to the 70s with your like disaster films like, you know, Poseidon Adventure and Towering Inferno, where you get like big all-star cast and you're like, who's going to die? You know, that's kind of like what this movie was.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you don't know who's going to survive. You got all these big names and, you know, obviously some of them aren't going to make it. So, but I thought it was a good rebirth of that genre that obviously got absolutely destroyed again as we went on, because that's always what happens. Happened with the horror genre with Scream. Scream reinvents it, and then it gets just toyed and toyed and toyed to death, and you know, gets sick of it after a while. So, but yeah, no, this is always one of my go-to movies at this time of the year. If I can't watch it on 4th of July, I'll watch it fairly close by.
Same. But let's talk about the sequel really quick.
Oh, really quickly. Almost 20 years. Pretty much, no, 20 years to the date, because it came out in 2016. So
yep, 20 years to the date.
We both even looked at each other and goes, do we want to see this movie?
Like, no. I don't think we saw it in theaters.
No, we didn't. Yeah. I saw it back at the Kent House.
I saw it on cable. I think I saw some of it while you were watching it.
Honest to God, it must have been on like HBO or it was like on that. Demand or maybe even one of the streamers. It came on.
Right Either away. Way, it sucked.
Oh, it sucked. I mean, you know, it's as we've said a few times, the Will Smith character. Will Smith doesn't return to the movie. They kill his character off before the movie starts.
Bill Pullman's crazy.
Pullman is crazy old president because he believes that they're coming back. You know, Jeff Goldblum. It did more bad than good, in my opinion, because I hate when you take a movie that ends on such a high note and you basically make all the characters go to hell the next way around, but not in a good way.
And also the problem you run into is, especially when you do a movie 20 years later, you have to put in new faces, and nobody wanted a new cast. We loved the old cast.
Loved the original cast. You basically turn Bill Pullman into the Randy Quaid character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've said Jeff Goldblum's character is basically playing the same character. You know, you think it was a little more not as the same as, I can't swear to that because, like I said, I just don't remember.
Yeah.
Judd Hirsch comes back, which boggles my mind because he looked ancient in the first one, and you know, he looks actually a little younger in this one.
He's still alive.
So, I mean, it was just stupid, and it wasn't needed. It wasn't wanted. It was the same director, so I'll give him credit there. But he really, that director, Roland Emmerich, honestly hasn't hit nearly as well as he did with this one. I mean, he did Godzilla next. Yeah. Then he did Why Am I Blanking?
You got this.
Day After Tomorrow.
Oh, that's a
which
good
I
one.
Like that the day. A, I like one. The Day After Tomorrow. It's watchable. And 2012, which is, again, watchable. It's not good, but it's watchable. Mm-hmm. Did you ever see 10,000 BC?
I saw bits and pieces of it.
No desire.
Not for me.
So, yeah. So, but, again, you know, sequel, like many sequels, just not wanted, not needed, and not good.
Mm-hmm. Star City rating, though, for...
Ooh, I give this a 4.
I will give that a 4 as well. It is an almost perfect movie.
Yeah.
It is exactly what it should be, and we love it.
Perfect summer blockbuster that, you know, hit all the right chords when it came out. Mm-hmm. Still resonates to this day. It's still one of those movies that people will watch anytime. The cast, you know Will Smith, obviously still, you know, a name actor today, you know, for different reasons. But, you know.
Still action-packed. Oh, well, so then. All right, so that's pretty much going to wrap us up for this episode. Anything else you want to add on?
Do we have a Fan Feedback Friday?
I was going to save it for the next one.
Save it
for
the next one?
Yeah.
There's a next one?
I know.
Oh, my God.
No, we're saving Fan Feedback Friday. Sorry, guys. But, yeah, that's going to... Oh, you know what we didn't mention? James Caan passed away. Oh.
Yeah, rest in peace, Sonny, from The Godfather. James Caan. Caan, Caan.
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 Yeah.
I did like him. I was a big fan of the show Las Vegas from the early 2000s. He was the star of that for the first like 5 years. I really enjoyed that show.
Yeah.
But yeah.
All right. Well, that's going to end us today. As always, I'm Paul.
I'm Sean.
And we'll be back next time.
Adios.